For I guess in certain traditions, the Judaic Christian traditions, there's the understanding of the Holy Ghost. That there is this monitoring aspect. That actually nothing moves without some influence of the Godhead. But again, it's according to what is the quality caliber of the movement. Means that there are no accidents. Means that everything we do is being monitored. And it means that we're never alone. It means that there is never a situation where there is void of opportunity to be able to gain full purity, to come back to Godhead. There's never a time when Krishna has simply let Kali or let Maya or let sin dominate to its extent that there is no hope. Here we have this community, one of the Krishna conscious communities. It's a very special community among communities in our society, because we have about, I think, 500 plus devotees who are living here. We have a great amount of elder disciples of Srila Prabhupada in the movement. We have a tremendous congregation of children who are growing, very vibrant, processing and working out and unfolding in various ways. We have people from all different cultural, economic, racial backgrounds, from all different religious backgrounds. And so there is amazing heterogeneity that's a part of this community. And that is powerful, especially when the nucleus is kept foremost. In these situations where there is lots of variety, where there is lots of variegatedness, it complements, it adds, it brings a more holistic and powerful production and presentation when there is in fact a serious common ground, potent nucleus. When not, the more variegatedness, the more variety, the more chaos, the more pandemonium, the more fragmentation, etc. So our society is quite unusual in that we're one of the few societies in the world that every day has classes in the morning as well as in the evening where, as one speaks, there is investigation, scrutinization, and requesting for clarification. If this is done in a mosque, in a synagogue, in a shrine, normally the questions are considered out of order. But when a speaker speaks in the Vaishnava line, it's expected that there will be questions, clarification, desire for connecting with precedence and according to our scriptures, and that is a part of the process for growth. Because it is understood that spiritual life, that where there is religion without philosophy, there is fanaticism, sentimentalism. And where there is philosophy without religion, there is no culture. There is simply speculation, interpolation, conjecture. So we have, in its constituted position as Vaishnavas, we have all of these, and the question is how often and how much do we use such. Srila Prabhupada explained that this Krishna conscious movement is a cultural movement for literally re-spiritualizing society. Therefore, every aspect of it is designed for spiritual progression. How we eat, sleep, make, defend. How we investigate things and what we conclude. It's all based on remembering that Krishna is in the heart, that it is for Krishna, that it is about Krishna, and therefore if it is about Krishna, it must be done in a way that the owner, the proprietor, the supreme parameswara will be satisfied, will be in fact pleased. The spiritual environment of Sanatana Dharma, this eternal religion that we are processing, is about culture, family culture, spiritual culture. Just as in the realms of business, politics, etc., there's also culture. And according to the type of culture, determines how the individuals aggregate and what their aspirations and what they accomplish. It's becoming more and more known, even amongst materialists, that when it comes, for instance, to productivity, when it comes to business, that it is about 15 to 20% knowledge, expertise, 80% relationship. Just as some time back, the big phenomenal thing happening here in America, where the Americans were trying to understand how it is that the Japanese have excelled in technology. Even though, as Americans, we had better business schools, we had greater endowment, more prepared teachers, more facilities, but still, we were not excelling in Japanese. Millions of dollars went into the investigation, studies from Stanford University, to simply find that the Japanese had more of a family culture. It has a lot to do with the basic mindset that is there when an individual feels a part of the organization, the institution. When an individual feels that the vision of the institution is sound and it includes that person's well-being. When an individual feels that the leadership is about the greatest care of those who are participating. When the leaders themselves show from their actions more than their speaking that they in fact care and are ready to share the benefits, the difficulties, the achievements along with the culture, the business or family culture. So spiritual life is even more of such because we are practicing now the activities that give nourishment to the soul, to stimulate the soul, to revitalize our Dharma consciousness, to act in sambandha, in relationship, where we ultimately have pure, sanatana, eternal relationship. That means it's not that we can do many things now and somehow we go back to the spiritual world. We go back to the spiritual world because we have become like that. We have become like residents of the spiritual world, and therefore we make a natural transition because we have entered into that mindset, that activity, that lifestyle. Lifestyle residence of the spiritual kingdom is dasa smio dasu dasa anuda, being a servant of the servant, of having pure relationship with serious unity with diversity, diversity with unity, Krishna-centered. We are one of the most diverse religions to have the most diverse theology, because we understand ultimately it's not just a matter of being with God as the Ajivara, but having many variegated relationships with the Godhead, and even within a particular rasa, so much variety. But all based on Krishna-centered position. So, often, in institutions, there is a tremendous amount of crisis management. There is constant conflicts to deal with, to address, to resolve. As a matter of fact, an institution, a business, a family, that is successful, we were discussing the other day, is successful because of its ability to judiciously, expediently, to righteously resolve conflicts. Wherever there is success, especially in Kali Yuga, or as we say, the age of quarrel, it is highly due to the ability to honestly address issues and to resolve them in a way that there is growth from the issue, there is expansion, and there is great opportunity for developing more efficiency. Where there is failure, it is clear that either the conflicts were ignored, that people were in denial, or they addressed them in a way that did not actually resolve, or they brought the same kind of mindset to the conflict, trying to resolve it, the same type of mindset that created it. As even mundane scholars are aware of this, Einstein said, you cannot solve a problem with the same type of mindset that produced the problem. So often, same type of mindset of self-centeredness, egocentricity, sovereignty, where one is thinking that one is right and other free people's areas, ideas have no value, then it brings just that. It brings fragmentation. There are different ways to resolve conflict in conflict epistemology. There is first the idea that I win only by your demise. And our Vedic heritage, we understand this to be rather absurd. That one can only win by destroying, eliminating, devastating another through its entirety. This is the mentality. A lack of understanding of Vaikuntha's mood, a lack of understanding of how we're mounted by the Lord in the heart, a lack of understanding of how we have a responsibility to each other, a lack of love. Because where there is love, if someone is paining, whether they're right or they're wrong, you want to address the pain and help to deal with the problem, and you care, and so because you care, you're not just thinking you're paining and you made a fool of yourself, and therefore you're wrong, or you're paining, you must have done this, you're concerned about how to help to deal with the pain, to evaluate, to analyze, at the end of the day, how to relieve the pain. So that as one who you have love for, you're concerned about their well-being. And because you're concerned about their well-being, you know, the pain to you or the pain to them, and the wound is there, and the wound is a wound, but we heal when we have wounds by not being in denial, by not denying the variables, by not exaggerating the variables, but by honestly putting the variables on the table, explaining our particular wounds, understand it, and feeling good when those who wound us can understand that and are ready to make a difference, then the healing goes into place. When there is genuine sharing, appreciation, and beyond sentimentality, beyond excessive passionate activity, beyond activities in the mode of ignorance or passion, but activities that now bring about a more positive, synergistic, symbiotic solution. Otherwise, this win-win does what? No one wins, because when there's winning at the demise of another, then whoever is demised is never fully satisfied and just plans to see how they can do some of it. You have many governments, many organizations that people sometimes function in that way, and there's never any peace. There's one group beside another, one shift after another, one power play after another, and in the end, everyone suffers. Then there's philosophy that I win and you lose. First, I can only win by destroying you, finishing you off. Only way. The other way, I win, but then you lose. The other is, I lose and you win. And of course, the other is a win-win. Advice novel consideration is always based on not just trying to defeat someone. It's like we do not just try to defeat Christians, Muslims, Buddhists, or Hindus. We have the nine offenses that one should not even preach to the faithless. Although we are supposed to be kind and merciful to everyone, some hum salabu say you. Then why is that we do not preach to the faithless? Because if we preach in such a way that it makes someone offensive, we preach in such a way that there's no genuine communication, we preach in such a way that it's ego versus ego, then one does not produce a positive solution. So therefore, as the Vaishnava is analyzing a particular problem, he is bringing to that, looking at himself first at fault. Considering someone is in pain, someone is wounded, some problem is there. What did I do? What could I have done? What can I do to be able to bring about greater love in the situation, in the environment, to be the servant of the servant? What can I do? I am seeing this person as baboo. Someone is in anxiety. Some conflict is there. What did I do improper? What could I have done? What can I do now? The one starts from that platform. And when there is a platform different from that, then one has to look close at the nature of the agenda. Whether or not it is just a matter of overreacting, whether it is just a matter of materialism, whether it is a matter of bringing in egocentricity based on self-righteousness, or whether it's a real matter of the family culture, where at the end of the day, everyone grows, learns, and is able to experience spiritual life, greater sense of divinity, become more eager toward the goal. Otherwise, it's considered violence. Violence is not just a matter of physical assault, but it's anything that we do to another that does not somehow encourage that person to become free from the shackles of this Bahiranga Shakti. And real association is association where what we say, what we do, what we arrange creates more chance for the Krishna conscious growth and experience. Srila Prabhupada, our founder of Acharya, as once example, many examples, but one example is coming to my mind many, many years ago when our movement was so new. And there was once a bhakta in New York named Bhakta Steve. And Bhakta Steve used to come around to the temple. And at some point, he no longer was coming. And Prabhupada inquired from the devotees, where's Bhakta Steve? The devotees informed Srila Prabhupada that Bhakta Steve had committed suicide. Srila Prabhupada became very grave, started praying, crying, speaking out loud, and saying, dear Krishna, first he was saying how unfortunate it is Krishna has sent someone to us and we have not been able to give care for this proper care. Then he started praying and crying, dear Krishna, wherever that soul is, please let him immediately come back in the body of a devotee. Now here is someone who was not an initiated disciple, who was not a grand disciple, who was not even up to the point of following all the four rules and regulations. But Srila Prabhupada was so mercifully concerned that this person had come, and although he had his issues, that the society was not such that it was able to upgrade this particular person. And so therefore, Prabhupada felt sadness in this particular case. So we can see that when there are issues, we want to first look at ourselves and think, what can we do to make a difference? The material is always interested in daivi sampat. I'm sorry, a civic sampat, material assets. We're looking at how to enhance the spiritual aspect in an aggregate particular type of manner. A devotee is not so quick to try to defend. Although we see constantly devotees are spiritual scientists. They want to declare Krishna Su Bhagavan Swayam. Prabhupada was so much interested and eager in eradicating the sense of Sunyavadi, impersonalism, voidism. But we see the greatest aspect of Srila Prabhupada was his character. We see that an example of Haridasa Thakur, he was not allowed in Jagannath Puri, as he was considered to be an outcast. But he proved his quality by his devotion. Sometimes situations are such that we cannot talk ourselves in or talk ourselves out of a problem that we've acted ourselves into. But we can only really act ourselves out where it becomes vivid and clear what the situation, what the solutions are. When Lord Chaitanya was being criticized by Ramachandra Puri, because this is an extreme case, and we're not suggesting that in these days we have Ramachandra Puri, because people are very, very deeply concerned in many, many environments. Like in our own environment, we're having a wonderful experience as we're taking inventory. Just 2 days ago, we're having discussions, a conference on the woman issue. And just today and yesterday, we're having discussions about guru issue and leadership issue. And this is wonderful in the sense that when there is no inventory, there will always be failure. And when there is proper inventory, there's a chance to look at what is happening, what is working, why is working, why is not. And a chance, if there's a spiritual family culture, a chance to see where to make the improvements. Many businesses, many groups, many institutions, many people themselves fail because they are not ready to take inventory. They're not ready to hear from others. They're not ready to look at what the ramifications of their activities. They're not ready to look clearly at sometimes if they think they're doing wrong. They're sending the wrong signals, how to function in a way of not to send the wrong signals. Or if they're doing the wrong thing, how to helpfully change and do that. That will be according to the spiritual rule of law. As we say, sadhu, sadhu shastra guru by kapili kuryaka. According to shastra, sadhu, and guru. We see that Lord Chaitanya at the same time very expertly defeated the impersonalists, the Mohammedans, and converted them. But he spoke to them in a way to connect, to be able to help them to understand that there was something higher and to help them to understand. He cared for them, and therefore what he was giving them was worth their value. And so Prabhupada sometimes explained to us how to be truthful and to be palatable. But of course, how the greatest truth is from the result of how the bhakti or higher bhakti prevail. In our philosophy, we have, our guests, we have ways to check balance on things. We have shastra or spiritual scripture, just like any bona fide tradition has, and also has saints that bona fide and evaluate the things on a day-to-day basis. And then we have guru or acharya. And we understand that when all of these things are not consistent, there's a problem. And it must be immediately researched. And we understand that sometimes you can use sadhu, shastra, and guru to come up with different conclusions. No problem. Then put the activities into operation and judge later by the results. But then how do we understand what is sadhu? How do we clear about what is shastra? How do we clear about what is guru? So we understand that we have certain qualities that constitute a sadhu. Sadhu is particular, karunika, sante, is merciful, he's tolerant, he's kind, he has divine characteristics. So we have to also evaluate if there is something being offered, we want it to be offered by sadhu. We want to look and see where there are sadhu qualities. And where something is being offered, it is not being offered by sadhu quality. Immediately we know there is an inherent problem right there alone. And when there is by sadhu quality, we want to see if it is in connection with shastra. And so shastra, we have the revealed scriptures that are available for us to check and to evaluate. And then we have guru, or spiritual master, spiritual mentorship. Now there are different ways, especially as we enter into more and more of an impersonal world culture, because we move from an agri-based civilization to an industrial, to a scientific, to now a data processing. So everything is becoming more impersonal, and there is more and more individual and collective movements toward lack of accountability. So people want to do things based on situational ethics, do things based on what is functional for the moment, do things based on what is rational, and that is okay for maturity. But for spiritual, they want to do things that is transcendentally blessed. Many things can be sociologically functional based on the rationality and have temporary results, temporary benefits. But when something is done that is spiritually transcendentally proper, then it is protected, it is blessed, and it is guided by that which is greater than one's own intelligence, greater than the maya or the illusion in the environment. As Kali is power more powerful than anyone, but Kali has a boss. And when we are shouted by Kali's boss, then there is success. So in this life, in this movement toward lack of accountability that happens on all levels, as well as in spiritual society, there's often desire to minimize rules, minimize what constitutes sadhu, minimize shastra. Matter of fact, the fall of civilization is actually the fall of the minical class. The fall of those who are supposed to be the caretakers, first by their example, then by their knowledge, by their instruction. As the Manusmita said, it is the leader that makes the age, not the age that makes the leader. So according to the quality of leadership determines whether it's Tapu Yuga, Treta Yuga, Kali Yuga, Dwapa Yuga, Dwapa Kali, or determines what aspect of a particular age is prevailing. According to the quality of leadership, and whether it's spiritual culture, political culture, business culture, also determines about the quality of productivity and the quality of success. One can never get away from leadership. It doesn't matter if you're in a mental institution, doesn't matter if you're in a prison, doesn't matter whether you're in a church, a mosque, cathedral, what, or a family, there's always going to be some aspect where there is someone coordinating or acting in terms of leadership. What is most important in spiritual life is when there is docile servant leadership, where one basically leads because of a desire to serve, a desire to help, a desire to assist. So based on that, one moves in situations to try to be there for each other, to be the servant of the servant. But when there is leadership based on the fact that someone is thinking they have a better idea, they're the best, they're the greatest, they're God's blessing, then there is a problem with that. Because then it often can minimize the necessary love and concern and awareness about what the field of activity to be able to be the servant of as many people as possible to bring about that based on sadhu, shastra, and guru. So there are particular ways of how to avoid guruship, even though guruship and mentorship is always there, leadership is always there. I'll give you an example. I just put a little card here just to take notice. In the Gnostic faith, there's a guru. The guru is called the Hierophant. In Christian mysticism, the guru is called the spiritual director. In Eastern Christianity, the guru is called the starist. In Islam, the guru is called the sheikh or the imam. In Sufism, the guru is called the sheikh or the fear. In Hasidicism, the guru is called the zadi. And then the guru is called the roshi. In Tibetan Buddhism, the guru is called the lama. There's always the position of guru. The question is the quality of that particular leadership. The question is the endowment and how one is proper, because the proper student becomes proper teacher. So when one has been proper student, then one has the ability to be proper teacher. So there must be investigation on what is the quality of proper teacher. Now there's movement in general on personalism, because people rely more on commodity rather than community. They rely more on external. They rely more on what is cosmetic based on their sense gratification. So there are four basic ways that it's becoming very prevalent throughout the society of how people avoid the idea of guru or mentorship connection. The first way is through the consideration that one is just stimulated and guided by the heart. So you'll find this in many New Age institutions. You'll find it in many places where there's not a spiritual heritage based on sadhusas and gurus, where someone is just ready to honor with the heart. You see the difficulty there, because then the mind, the intelligence, often becomes the majority, and one can do things, rationalize it all based on ego. And so it's a dangerous position. Or sometimes there is the minimization of importance of guru based on the fact that one is considering that guru is everywhere and in everything, which can often mean that guru or mentorship is nowhere. Or often there is a tendency, to accept disembodied authorities or accept authorities that are passed on, because with such there can be a lack of accountability, or you move away from getting your butt kicked, or you move away from being chastised or criticized. And so often people prefer that kind of system. You find many people in pseudo-spiritual movements that are basically about psychic mystical things. They can have great attention to the channeler, to the disembodied authority, to the angel, to the archangel, to the extraterrestrial, but no physical authority, because as long as they can do it based on this subtle thing, they can choose and accept, reject according to their mind. And then there's the minimization of guru based on the disposable guru. That sometimes we have the connection, we use it when we want, and we don't, then we discard. So these are some ways that there is gradual increase in minimization. But we see, like according, for instance, to Bhagavad Gita, it is difficult. Bhagavad Gita 11:54, Prabhupada explains in the purport, without personal guidance from personal spiritual master, becomes impossible to understand Krishna. We understand that when Krishna himself comes into this world, every single time he comes and he accepts a personal guru. And he doesn't even need anybody's guru. Diksha guru, Diksha guru, Bhavana Pratapada guru, he doesn't need any title. He doesn't even need sadhu. But every time he comes, he himself takes us to show us the necessity, the need that is there. When we go on, we see that Srila Prabhupada was a very special personality. He was a founder of Acharya. This is not an ordinary guru. First, Srila Prabhupada was predicted in the Chaitanya Mangala as a Sinapati Bhakta. But Chaitanya said that he will spread the knowledge to Bhakta throughout India. But there shall be one who shall come, who shall spread all over the world, who shall be like a bounty hunter, and shall literally go from country to country and spread the message, like reclaiming souls and planting the seed. The Lord himself has said like this, that there will be one who will do such. And then in the Brahma Bhairata Purana, it mentions there shall be the Brahma, there shall be the mantra Upasaka, who shall be the global spreader of the holy name. And in Bhaktivinoda, in his Chuchushani, he mentions how there shall be, back in the 18th century, how there shall be one who shall get the holy name spread in all different languages where people are chanting Jai Satyananda. So Srila Prabhupada predicted even before he physically appeared into this particular planet. These very highly, highly evolved souls were not just ordinary prophets, ordinary gurus, even ordinary acharyas. But when they are this level, we see that not only do they do amazing, superhuman things, but even before they come, they are fulfilling a great aspect of Krishna's eternal mission as they come and they operate in such a way. After Prabhupada left the planet, the movement has gone on in different ways, and in some ways many, many mistakes. In some ways, many thought that they were little Prabhupada. Little Prabhupada as gurus, little Prabhupada as simple presidents, little Prabhupada as simple coordinators, simple commanders, sankirtan leaders. It's been a big problem of people trying to be Prabhupada on all different levels. And therefore, because of such, there's been a lot of manipulation, capitalization, a lot of exploitation, and a lot of dealing in situations where we're not fully qualified. Now what does that mean? Our position, it is very simplistic. We are like, for instance, some of us are spiritual masters. And so what is our position? We see the Lord Chaitanya says, everyone should save the land and become gurus. Different types of gurus. But what are we? We are like what? It's like a young girl at 12 years old. She becomes pregnant and has a child. She is a mother, but she is also a child. She will be a failure if she does not act as a mother. The child will simply be deprived and the child will suffer. But at the same time, if she acts as if she is a mature mother, the child will also suffer because she is a mother, but she's also a child, and therefore she must take notice and take shelter of maturity so she can understand how to evolve and to be a proper mother. So it is an extreme to say that she is just a child, yes. And it's also an extreme to say that she is a mature parent. Either way, there will be a failure. What Prabhupada has given us is something similar to a young student who is very young, 19 years old, but somehow they have the chance to go to high school. Let's say they have a chance to become freshmen at the university. What is the situation? This child has been given some mercy, some unusual situation, some great talent, according to how it is looked at. If the child, first level, considers this is too difficult, I'll never be able to excel, the child will be a failure. If the child thinks, I am qualified for this, why didn't it happen a long time ago, the child will be a failure. But if the child considers, somehow, this great mercy has come upon me, I'm only 9 years old, I'm put in freshman school, now I must work to come up to that, to be that, so that I can function on that particular level. If one denies, one will simply be a failure. One, if one thinks it is too difficult, one will be a failure. If one thinks that they're already like that, there'll be a big embarrassment and a big failure. But to the degree that they understand this is some rare mercy and they're ready to work up to that. When Prabhupada gave us first initiation, Brahma initiation, sannyas, guru, to be book publishers, to be book distributors, to be cooks, it was all a chance to become that. It was a chance to be blessed, to come up to that, to be given encouragement, but it was not some kind of stamp that once we get Brahman, we are Brahman. It's now there are certain standards about being Brahman, now come up and become like that, and it means a chance to grow, but also a chance, if we do not use this property, we get electrocuted. Anytime something is very powerful, if it's used in the right way, there is tremendous growth, and not, there is tremendous inauspiciousness. Electricity is very powerful. You use it right, you get illumination. You lose it improper, you get electrocuted. This life, where I guess, there are different systems of government. There is communism. There is socialism. There's oligarchical arrangements. There's monarchy. There's democracy. We understand by Vedic cosmology, epistemology, ontology, axiology, that the greatest system is monarchy. But when monarchy is not based on what is magnanimous, based on what is benevolent, monarchy becomes the worst possible system. Becomes tyranny, becomes just gross autocratic. But when there is a family culture, when everyone is concerned about everyone, when each person is playing their part, concerned about the effects of that, doing that based on, as we say, sadhu shatagu, then what happens is it becomes like a family. And one of the biggest problems in society today is the family units are falling apart. The family is a microcosm of the race, of the nation, of the planet. So when the family unit is falling apart, civilization is also falling. When institutions are not able to have that family culture, then they fall apart. Then you have anarchy, you have posturing, you have power manipulation, you have conflict that become protracted, And gradually people suffer from all kinds of fallout. If your brother in your family is a drunkard, then your whole family suffers from that. As that person is living with you, everybody's experiencing some difficulty based on that particular person's lifestyle. So when someone is wrong, someone is pain, someone is improper, then it becomes a wake-up call how to assist that person. And the greatest way you assist your drunken brother is you show why you are not drinking, why you are not participating, and how you're accelerating because you are not doing that. Our greatest examples are examples that speak so loud based on the purity, based on the clarity. Whenever there is ambiguity, there is maya. Ambiguity in spiritual life is a distraction. It brings weakness of faith. It brings confusion about sadhusats and gurus. So whenever there's ambiguity, there must be a quick way to try to exceedingly to resolve and deal with the conflict based on how to bring about a greater love and a greater focus on Krishna in the heart based on what Krishna wants. Because in Adi Lila, it is said that Lord Krishna, in the form of guru, appears to deliver the devotees. That means actually, Jayasa Mamprapajante, Tam Sarebabra, Mamanapajante, Manusha Pajasavarsha. That literally, whatever is going on, Krishna is ultimately assisting based on the aggregate of desires and consciousness. So Krishna can work through a dog, through a donkey, through a prostitute. Krishna is the one who helps the living entity. Based on the purity of that living entity, Krishna will come through. And so therefore, the more one is pure, the more one will get the guidance that coincides and compensates that is in concatenation with that level of purity. And to think that Krishna cannot come through, then it's to suggest that Krishna is not in everyone's heart, Krishna is not everywhere, Krishna is not merciful, Krishna is not all-pervading, Krishna is not Bhagavan. It's a matter of how, what aspect of Krishna that we're tuning into. It's Bahiranga, it's Atasta, it's Antaranga Shakti. And when we're distinctly depending on Krishna's Antaranga Shakti, there is no ambiguity. It speaks out, it rubs, it blasts out. So a problem often we have is a general lack of purity on all parts. And so what we all need to work on is all how we can all become more pure so our actions will speak distinctly. So that this isn't the case of Abhiram. He would go around and he would be able to evaluate the purity. If the deity was not installed, the deity would crack. When he offered obeisance to someone who was not proper, they would left. Who was it? Whose son was it? Nityananda's son? Anybody remember? Yes. Nityananda's son. We should have Abhiram. We have meetings. We want to evaluate something. We bring in. We come in. We have the purity. We decide right on the spot. Not that we have to become constantly absorbed in interpreting and speculating, because Prabhupada did say very clear when he had the argument with Professor Stahl. They went on and on, arguing point for point. Then he explained that a pundit can argue anything based on having sufficient knowledge, can present any point, any good argument or debater, whatever the issue is, can argue for it and present a strong case. But the question is, where and how, to what degree are we becoming free of sense gratification? Our mission is to come to the Vasudeva platform, to see Krishna face to face, to be able to have a problem, and then we go before the Murti and we ask you the Prabhupada, what do you want to be done? This is the issue we should be discussing. How do we come to a point that we no longer have this kind of ambiguity? We have stronger relationships amongst ourselves. We have children who are not taking drugs, children who are not engaged in illicit sex. We have children who are strong in devotion because they have faith in our devotion. But we have children who are bewildered and doing devious things because they do not see the system, they do not see enough of the leadership, they do not see enough in the family, enough to make them feel secure to move into that direction. So we look at our family culture to see how to deal with our immediate family to be able to serve and to offer the proper part. Krishna is watching our Yata Adhika. He knows our abilities. He knows what we have. And he's checking out how we're using what has been given to us. As he's in the heart, he is observing. Sometimes we overreact, or sometimes we inflate. But we must be careful not to delete. And this is nothing new. We see the time when there was divine rights of the kings, and they were so abusive. We see when the time when there was proper infallibility, when so much leadership, even from a monarchical, cultural, as well as from a spiritual point of view, had become corrupted. This does happen. Because when there is great chance to accelerate based on the spiritual adequacy, if it is abused, there's a problem. So we've all been abusers, sanguine leaders, presidents. We have majority of our senyas have fallen. We have so many of our gurus have fallen. And we have practically so many of our presidents have fallen. We have a greater number of presidents that have fallen in fact than any other leadership. And it means we have to look close to all see to what degree we need to purify ourselves and make a difference by first being that difference that we're trying to act and put upon others. And as we do that, then our own purity will force others to become purity. If you come to me and you offer me drugs, you offer me intoxication, you offer me offensive discussions, it means there's something about me that allows you to connect with me on that level. But if I am properly, sufficiently astute of devotion, then you don't offer me drugs, you don't offer me intoxication because you know it's outside of our relationship, outside of what I will intend. So we have a responsibility to all become pure, where our purity imposes on the environment and brings about the greater connection. And then we are discussing very fine states of things like the Goswami, still differences, but all based on our experiences, realizations, and how we're serving to the Prabhupada, and how we are entrenched, and we are totally absorbed in the higher scheme of things. Otherwise, we see that we're not trying to become, even the Goswamis, even the Acharyas, we see that they were different. But there was no enmity. There was, even in the spiritual world, there's differences. But there is no attacking in the spirit of forgetting that others are Vaishnavas, or in the spirit of thinking that one is all right and another is all wrong. So I want to stop in a minute because I'm one of a time and I definitely want to have questions. Otherwise, it seems like I'm just saying something. The devotee says, if Prabhupada is present, this movement is the movement of Madhavendra Puri's movement, Jiva Goswami's movement, Nanda Goswami. It's the movement of Bhakti Siddhanta, Bhakti Vinod, Srila Prabhupada. They are always on the case. But at the same time, they've given us a system where we are to be acting in our devotional service based on our relationship. And always ready to be Dasos me. Always ready to have many gurus to learn from the end, like in the case of the Ashanti Brahmana. Always learning constantly. Someone who is actually very serious, every opportunity is a chance for them to learn from some kind of mentorship. They even learn from somebody who's deviating, how not to deviate, or what the results of those are. What of having guidance, one is always trying to get guidance, trying to process it. But also trying to put it based on Sarvajaya Guru. So Prabhupada is our eternal shishya, because he is the founder of Acharya. Very similar to the case of Ramanuja Acharya. In the Ramanuja Sampradaya, it is always that the founder is very, very special. The guru is basically assisting others in trying to move with Ramanuja's great blessings as is being offered to Krishna. So it is not that they are not taking position of guru, or not that that personality is unimportant, is gone, but all of those things are there. It's not an either or. We're so much making things either or. We're making it that guru is the Nitya Siddha, and then we have the Dhammacharya, and now we're demasculating guru, where we're creating some kind of strange sort of arrangement where we can't even act like a family. Even if I speak to my father, I can speak to my father and say, Dad, and my uncle is happy with it. But we have a situation now, if somebody is speaking about their guru, then their uncle gets disturbed. He is not my dad. This is how crazy we become and confusing our family. You understand? If somebody is saying, calling the dad by his dad's name, you realize that that's a relationship and you honor that because you're glad to see the family is there. But we're in a mood that we're minimizing someone is trying to make some expression of their father, and we say, he may be your father, but he's not mine. Or we look at them like we don't want to hear that. It weakens the family culture. It means that we're considering that while we're saying putting Prabhupada in the center, we're minimizing the fact that Prabhupada is not just history. By our actions, we're saying Prabhupada is history. Prabhupada is still alive, his family is still there. Even to the point that we see, this is a little esoteric, but we see when great personalities come, beings come before them, when Krishna comes and his eternal soldiers, beings come before them and set up the environment, they come with them and some come after.
And so, because we have had initiation by Prabhupada, that is wonderful. But there are some personalities who are also part of Prabhupada's arrangement for this planet who didn't get the physical initiation from him, but who were connected with him as grand disciples, connected with his siksha, who also have as much to do with this movement as we do. And we cannot minimize this movement. We're actually hurting ourselves. We're hurting the Goswami, who ultimately will make it happen, because this is a lila of Lord Chaitanya, it will happen. It's a matter of what entities are able to do it. But we minimize all the 20, 30 years of work that so many of us have done. When there is another chapter that can also assist in it, we want to give them encouragement. So we want to move more toward raising the standard of consciousness of those who are in all positions. And not just thinking that we can legislate love, that we can make many laws, but if we don't change consciousness, we're just going to have other types of problems. Yes, the laws can help to gear toward that, but if the love of Krishna, love of Guru, Krishna in the heart, doing it for Krishna is not the priority, then it just becomes another arrangement for crisis management that then brings other types of protracted problems.
Is it unfair to expect the new disciples to have to accept the conditions?
One should always try to get the highest type of guidance as possible. But what did Prabhupada himself say? Prabhupada himself said, Abram Bara, he said, it is not that I am liberated. He said, I am conditioned. He said, but my spiritual master, but he's not just liberated. And because I follow him, therefore I am liberated. This is what Prabhupada himself said.
But we are not liberated.
How do you know? Why then did so many majority of servants who served Prabhupada fell down? Because they misperceived certain things. So they didn't know. So they didn't know. Some of our greatest scholars who associated with Prabhupada have fallen down. Many people who, if they had to be with Prabhupada now, there would be so much tremendous offenders. Because we have our perception of Guru as being God. We have a perception of Guru being some type of magician. Prabhupada, now, I'm not degrading my spiritual master. I'm just trying to identify something happened. Prabhupada knows the good birth quality going to be able to see. So what we say? Do we say his condition so? No, but we have to see through the eyes of the shastra. But many people around did have problems like that. We should understand that. Many of those who were with Prabhupada closely did fall down because they started misperceiving or they were not constantly looking at things based on through the eyes of the scripture. They were thinking that their own eyes, their own intelligence was all that they had. And come prevalence. And most come prevalence than anything else. Just like there's no such thing as a fallen Brahmin in the sense. No disagreement on this. I'm saying that there are those who've taken a position of Brahmin, who've taken a position of sannyasi. If a sannyasi falls down, it also was not a sannyasi. If a temple president falls down, it was not a bona fide temple president. But one was given that position to act in that spirit, in that mood. So yes, if a guru falls down, it was not a bona fide guru. Just as that temple president was a part of the ISKCON society and was getting a chance to represent Srila Prabhupada. So the fact that person deviated meant that he was not a full proper representative of Srila Prabhupada. Anyone who does not properly represent Srila Prabhupada is to be given a chance. And how we use that chance, and that determines what our situation is. But Krishna, it says, hey, Shamsata Sayyutana, Bhajan Pretty Pulling. See, Krishna says, I give them. Those who worship me with love and devotion, he says, I give. So it's all about Krishna, according to how much we are receptive, receiving, then Krishna is doing. If it's not happening, it means we're not letting Krishna be able to do it. So I'll come back. Let me take one more question.
More of our system.
Srila Prabhupada explained how Jesus is our guru. And one of the things that's so powerful about Vedic knowledge, not only is it the oldest scripture known to humankind, mostly encyclopedic, but it has some of the most amazing theology about what happens when we finally do attain connection with the Godhead. It gives us what we find in all interconnections of bona fide theology. Like the Bible says, how the pure in heart shall see God. And in the book of John, it says, not that anyone should know the Father, but he was of God to know God. And then in Revelation, the very last chapter, it says, there shall be those who shall be known as the servants of God, shall have the mark of the Lord on their forehead, and they shall see his face. In the Hadith, which is connected with the Quran, it says, the highest experience in paradise is to have the vision of Allah. And the Quran emphasizes that Muhammad, that when he had his ascension, this is Islamic theology, that when he went from the lower planet to the medium to the higher, then he went to what's called the heavenly kingdom. At that point, he went beyond what is called Sudratil. Sudratil is where it said that he saw Allah face to face. And it says that he had a relationship with Allah as like friends, putting his hand on Allah's shoulder. So there is this inner, deeper connection that we go more and more, and we find that it brings us to a point of personal reciprocation with the Godhead. Or like in vital mysticism, or sometimes in the monastic order, the idea of the nun marrying God and becoming like the wife of God. So in Krishna consciousness, it explains about the Supreme Lord as being the Supreme Personality, that there is an eternal relationship that every single entity has with Krishna, eternal service. It can be in neutrality, it can be in servitudeship, it can be in friendship, it can be as a parent, or it can be as a lover. So what it tells us in essence is that just as in mystical system it says so below, so above, so below, or the fact that Jesus says in my Father's house there are many, many mansions, means that there's much variegatedness in the spiritual realm where it is centered around actual service and communication with the Godhead. For the Bible doesn't say the pure in heart shall think about God, shall reflect on him, it says shall see and shall be. The Quran, the Hadith, many other scriptures emphasize that, and the Bhagavatam starts on that platform. Bhagavad Gita starts on the platform of where religion starts. It starts on the platform where Krishna, God, is talking to Arjuna, now giving him all information that is noumenal and phenomenal. So it really starts where religion starts. Religion is a basic vehicle to bring us with ethics and morality, a sense of principle synergism, a sense of faith in divinity. And once that's there, then the thing is, what are the activities, what are the relationships in that particular permanent state? So that is the science of Krishna consciousness, science of the soul, its unfoldment, and its relationship. So I'm already somewhat behind, but I'll stay around for more questions and things. That is the feast that's ready, and they warned me about this in time. I didn't mean to talk quite so long, so we have more time for questions. But thank you very much. As I said, I always love to come here because there's so many wonderful devotees, one of our most important temples in the world. I'm really happy to come at this time where you're having these sort of discussions. I've learned so much from different devotees, and I've learned more from those I disagree with than those I agree with, because we can learn so much and understand so much about where our family is at in the state of evolution by not just those who we fully agree with, but those who have various shades and various understandings and various considerations and various things to present based on the fact that they are integral, important members of this movement. Every single devotee is so important. Anyone who somehow has come under the shelter of Lord Chaitanya, of Lord Nityananda, at this particular time, this dispensation, this point in evolution, is very, very special. One of the things that hurt our movement more than anything else is how we sometimes minimize the potency of Vaishnava, of Sadhu Sangha. Whether it's Bhakta Jain or Bhakta John or somebody who's 20 years or 30 years, that for Krishna, none of that makes a difference. It doesn't matter whether you're a GBC, whether you're a sannyasi, whether you're a grihastha, whether you're a woman or a child, Krishna is looking at our love. And we see time and time again, many people have done many, many powerful things, but if their heart wasn't in the right place, then there will be some failure. Krishna will give you many opportunities to make a change, but if not, because Krishna is Atmaram, he doesn't need anything, he doesn't want anything, but he wants us to position ourselves to receive his love. And therefore, as we have many problems and many challenges, it can actually be used to increase our desperation. It is a beautiful time in our society because many people are becoming more desperate and trying to see how to help. And if that desperation is there, they are blessed under the Paramparat. If that desperation is there, then it means like they're calling for help, they're calling for guidance, they're calling for divine intervention, they're calling for Prabhupada, that this is your family. Family, we're having problems, we have a difficulty trying to cope, trying to exist, trying to expand. Please come and help us. And when enough people are doing that with sincerity, whatever else is going on, that will enhance and produce and move the movement like anything. So we're at a time that is like birth pain. A new chapter is about to open. Because everywhere there is material as well as spiritual environment. And don't think it's only happening in our society. It's happening in all kinds of spiritual institutions. There's all kinds of exposure. These are the days that whatever you have is going to come out, and whatever you don't have is going to come out. People are not going to be so easy to hide behind institutions, hide behind position, hide behind gender, hide behind other types of things. Whatever people have, it will come out, and whatever you don't have, it will also come out. We just have to be perceptive and start watching as things come out. Shri Prabhupada!